Hello, everybody. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion once again with our subject of Adam and the Fallen Man. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And thank you for joining us. And we'll start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 68. Of Watchers, Prayers, and Arguments. It's a prayer for oneself. I thank thee, Father, Mother, God, that neither ignorant, fraudulent, nor malicious mortal mind can reach me or affect me mentally, physically, financially, or otherwise, and I know it. For God is the only power, that I am not the victim of aggressive mental suggestion, nor the target of malicious animal magnetism, claiming to operate through any channel whatever, but I am the blessed legal child of God, spiritual, immortal, all harmonious, perfect, happy, healthy, pure, sinless, free and fearless and diseaseless and deathless, expressing the substance of all good. Hold yourself constantly and consciously under God's eternal law of blessing, of happiness, harmony, health, peace, joy, power, progress, protection, abundance. There is no other law. Only a contrary mortal mind lie, which you are awake and alert to, and not under. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. A perfect treatment for today. That this is the true Christian Science Mother's Day. We're not born into matter. We don't die out of it. And our Father, Mother, God is our Father, Mother, God, always, and everyone else are our friends in Christ. Thank you, Florence. Okay, the watching point.
Watch number 4. Watch, lest your familiarity with the text of the Bible and science and health cause you to believe that any part of it is self-evident or self-explanatory, or that the meaning is readily discernible because it appears to be obvious. The true meaning of inspired words can never be gained by the process of human reasoning.
Thank you very much. Okay, anyone want to comment on that?
Well, I hate to admit it, but I will confess, Adam, this lesson, Adam and Fallen Man, for many years seemed to be a lesson that I didn't. I said, oh gosh, again, we got to read the Adam and Fallen Man again. I just, you know, I read it so many times. What else is new there? And man, I have come, you know, 180 degrees. I guess my learning that the communing with God is, the word of God is, you know, just so important. And as these writers in the Bible and most were inspired, and of course Mary Baker Eddy, they were inspired by God to write those words. But it was their inspiration, it's their oneness with God that brought out these truths from God. And so, but we can't stop there. This is that he says, inspired word of the Bible is our sufficient guide to eternal life. So we need to commune our oneness with God. We need to go to these and say, okay, God, what is your message for me today? What do you say? What's a fresh look on these words that I've read so many times? But you have a message for me. And that's changed. I mean, I look forward to reading this lesson. I get so much more out of it. And anyway, I just, that's one of the reasons why I picked this. It's just so important that we come to it. And it's been said before, with new, fresh inspiration and looking forward to hearing what God has to say to us.
Thank you.
No, that's good. And also, that's why we keep reading the textbook, because every time we read it, we should be learning something new, right?
Yes.
No, cool.
I mean, it's good for us if we want it. You know, it's when people stop wanting to grow spiritually that they think with the human mind instead of waiting for the inspiration. And that's, you know, that's a shame, because until we all ascend, there's going to be new things to learn. And it's not the, yes. It's not the, and you know, and it's not the words that heal.
No.
It's the love of God and the inspiration. And like you say, our communion with God that does the work.
Thank you. Lawrence?
It is the feeling of the Christ's presence with you. And that's why I learned much earlier to pray always before you read the lesson, because there's always something in it for you in particular. And so, Father, you know, just let me know what I need to know today. You know, it's important that we maintain this connection, or we are awake to the connection with God all the time, God's presence with us. God's presence with us. I feel that, you know, so we might say, oh, I don't feel God. Well, continue to do it, to ask for that, you know, to feel that presence with you, and you will. This is the whole point of the whole lesson. We read the lesson or read it and then go on and do whatever you want. No, read it and then whatever message you got, you know, keep it in thought, remember it. So that's how I feel.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It makes it your own. You work with it during the day, whatever the thoughts are. And the thoughts should be ever increasing. This is your arsenal. This is the renewing of your mind, getting rid of all the old man and putting on the new. And as I quote again in Florence's article, Who Speaks? She says, these are not just some words. This is God speaking. It has power. And whatever increases our faith, conviction, and reliance on God is essential in helping to find ourselves, feel the power of God at hand, and realize our salvation. Just remember that. This is Word of God you're reading, whether it's the Bible or Mrs. Eddy's works. Speaking directly to you, it's powerful. I saw something recently, Nancy from Texas had sent it to me actually a while ago, but I guess I'd forgotten it. But you know how we talk about seeing Mrs. Eddy as the woman in the apocalypse and how important that is. She was not just some woman writing down a nice little book. Well, in this email Nancy had sent me, I guess during the 90s, Paul Smiley knew Hoagland, I forget his first name. He was on the board. But anyway, of directors at that time, I think he was. Anyway, at that time, Paul was working with Hoagland to get a majority on the board to once again officially reinstate Mrs. Eddy as the woman in the apocalypse. But they came rather close. I was happy to see that, but
only 2 out of 5 were willing to do that.
Yeah, and then Paul passed on, and it didn't happen. But I thought even the fact that they were working to do that, I was grateful for that. So, and I'd like to mention, I probably have mentioned this book, but I've been quite taken with it. It's a book that Tom from New York found, an old book, and It was written in 1904. It had 8 publications, which showed how popular it was at that time. I know Mrs. Eddy must have known about it. And it's called Talita Kumi, A Story of Freedom Through Christian Science. And it's by an Annie Jefferson Holland. Now, in this book, it's about a little girl. And of course, most of you know Talita Kumi. That's what Jesus said to the little girl. Yes, Jairus' daughter. Thank you. Damsel, arise, or little girl, wake up, arise. It's powerful, powerful words, very meaningful. Mrs. Eddy refers to them again in prose work somewhere. I don't know offhand where, but she speaks about this waking up process, waking up, which is really what Adam and fallen man is all about. But anyway, this little girl, and I'm just going to read an excerpt from this book. And it's an old-fashioned type book. You might consider it a children's book. I don't know, but it's a kind of book I like. So anyway, this little girl, she's in a family of 6 girls, and 5 of them, her sisters, are all very beautiful. But this little girl was born evidently with some deformity. And it made me think of maybe perhaps the Doris Henty story. But anyway, she really never, I wouldn't call her jealous, but she did wish she was beautiful like her other sisters. They were all beautiful, beautiful hair and eyes and everything about them. And she was always the object of pity. Poor Penelope, her name was. Poor Penny. Yeah. It made her feel so bad, and she would cry over it. And to the point, even her mother didn't want them to have any more birthday parties because she thought it would draw unnecessary attention to Penelope. So she cried about it a lot and felt sad. She was happy that she had such beautiful sisters, but sad about her own situation, as was everybody, evidently. So then one day she's out in the beautiful glen, I guess it was, and this another beautiful young girl comes along and wonders why she's crying and speaks tenderly to her, telling her, don't cry, little girl, and talks to her and has a science and health and gives it to her. And Penelope always has deep pockets in all her dresses because she likes to carry things in her pockets. So anyway, she keeps that book in her pocket, but the girl, and the girl's name happened to be Love Hathaway. She speaks the truth to Penelope and tells her about a God that loves her and tells her that this is the most precious book she will ever own. And that, you know, how God can heal anything. Nothing's impossible to God. And she says, well, even my crooked back and all of this, and Love says, yes, of course, of course. So for the first time in her life, Penelope has this hope. And in reading the book, you can just feel it, like for the very first time, maybe the very first time you ever read something in Science and Health or even elsewhere that just washed over you with joy and peace and the power of it. So it says, The hours spent with Science and Health were wonderful hours to Penelope. The more she read, the more she wished to read. Each fresh promise, each clear statement filled her with exquisite happiness. God was her father, Love, the only power. No laws of his, she knew, had made her life a burden. There was divine authority, as Jesus had shown, for the destruction of all that was unlike God. And she reached out eagerly for help that was near at hand and not afar off. God never made me deformed, said Penelope. And sometimes she went to Science and Health with tears very near the surface, but always to find help and fresh encouragement. It was difficult now and then not to be influenced by what she heard, by what she felt those about her were thinking, not to see the pitiful glances, not to fear the eyes of strangers or see the compassion that came into them when they turned upon herself, not to shrink from the glances that followed her about. It was so easy to see in her dressing room mirror the old face and the old shape, and so difficult not to see them as stubborn fact, and in face of it to hold the real thought of herself in mind, to know that she was made in God's image and likeness, and to smile back courageously at the taunting image in the glass, which seemed to say, "Oh, I am you. Can't you see? It is nonsense to believe that science and health has shown you anything. Can't you see it isn't true? This is what you are. Ask anyone. So don't get that foolish notion in your head. You will always be exactly as you are." When this thought came, Penelope always caught at it and answered back, "Yes, always, exactly what I am. And I am God's perfect child, God's perfect child. Science and health shows me this, and I know love is the only power." And I'm only halfway through, but we can be sure this has a happy ending.
Okay, dear. Thank you. Thank you, Cornhub.
Yes, isn't she dear? Mm-hmm. And isn't that true? And haven't we all struggled with things like this? And to see her fresh, innocent thought, and to see her seeing this truth for the first time. And to me, in many ways, that's what that watching point is about. To see it new and fresh, but do it every day, every morning, and not to see it the same old thing. And then have Arab bossing you around during the day with these ugly, awful suggestions. And I know I read the last sentence in the book, and I know that I think it's the mother speaking, but saying to the husband, you know, she has all her daughters are pretty, but Penelope is beautiful. Yeah. So, that's yes. Mm-hmm. So in other words, Penelope found her beauty and she was healed of that deformity, as was Doris Henty. And those things are considered impossible, right? That's
human
kind of what.
Yes.
Yes, to human reasoning. Yes, to the doctors. And that's what's so beautiful about this story, because for her, this was her life. She had these beautiful sisters, and this was her. And now it all changed through science. And the hope and the consistency she gave with it. Throughout the book, she's always telling the truth to herself and spending hours taking the little science and health out of her pocket and spending time reading it. Beautiful. Until it finally worked its work. It is beautiful. And this book, it's a lovely copy, I guess. It's from, I was calling it old-fashioned books, but it's called Forgotten Books. And Jeremy got it for me. And the print and everything's so big and beautiful. Some of these old things don't look so good. But how did you get it? Was it? I think you can get it on Amazon, but Jeremy got it.
Yeah, mine's coming. So I did get it from Amazon. Mine's on the way.
Okay, you got it. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I will have the direct link to the Forgotten Books page for that book.
Yeah.
The roundtable page.
The book is also on archive.org, so you can read it online.
Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. I bought the book, too. Yeah.
You did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bought it.
It's now part of our vast library on archive.com.
Yeah. And thank Tom. I mean, I never would have heard of this book. And it's such a beautiful story, yeah. And written during Mrs. Eddy's time and published, how many? Eight publishings of it. So it was very, very popular. And it should be again, shouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Maybe it will help this kind of thing, you know, if people get to know it, it will help those who accept, you know, that, oh, you're born with something and you accept it. And then the doctors, of course, go into how we can categorize this and what is being done, biotech now or something, to find how they can solve it humanly, of course, and never really get solved, you know. So maybe this kind of thing would be helpful. Someone told me they did download it, PDF, they download the whole thing and reading it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, it is readily available. Craig, what did you say?
Oh, they're doing this DNA analysis where they can remove determine whether you have a predisposition to something, and then devise some sort of treatment based on that.
Yes.
They got all sorts of human doings they keep coming up with.
Yes, well, thank you. Not to mention all this plastic surgery, which has just gone kaflooey through the roof. And so many people losing their natural beauty in all of this, and everyone's starting to look the same. Pardon me?
No, there's someone who looks totally, I don't know, I hate to use the word, but I would have kept what I had before. It gets awful.
It's different.
I mean, I'm sure they regret it now.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's something you have to keep up. A dreadful kind of a thing that's taken over our country to some degree. So
the disbelief in you're born a certain way with, you know, characteristics or limitations or whatever, or defects or whatever, is what needs to be handled on what's called Mother's Day, isn't it?
Yes.
Who's your mother?
Well, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, the mother love is a very... You know, it's a very wonderful thing because it's unselfed. But if it becomes selfish, it can turn, you know, it can be bad and have bad results. So it needs to be not only unselfed, but it needs to be divine. And we need to know that about ourselves and about our children and about our parents and anybody else that's close.
Thank you. Mrs. Evans used to say she thought this was the worst of all the holidays, if you will, mainly because it was all this belief of life and matter. Born into it, die out of it. That's what the majority of people feel, and can be a very maudlin sense about your mother, or a hateful sense, or all kinds of things. People feeling elated, people feeling miserable. It's almost like any so-called human holiday. So we lift it up past that to the truth of it, and it's handled in this lesson. Who are your mother, brother, sisters?
And really, it's not a holiday.
No, it's not.
No, it's a contrived day to buy a card and spend money, right? Or flowers.
Start this way.
What?
Somebody gave me an article about the history of Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah.
It started long, long ago, I think in the 1800s, where women started going out on a day, a special day, and they would take things to the poor, take food and things they needed. That's that they were mothering. That's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became this, which is too bad.
Too bad, yeah.
It's the mother.
Yeah, well, yes. You were not selling too much, so you need to sell more. So.
Yes.
Yeah, right. They need to sell more. Exactly.
Yeah,
chocolates, cards, whatever. And of course,
candy.
Yes, they call Mrs. Eddy mother because she was the mothering type. And she, somewhere I've read, I think Florence knows this too, she always called God by mother, the feminine so-called side of it.
Mother love.
Mother love, thank you. Mother love.
Yeah, so, I like to do that at night before going to bed.
Well, yes. So it certainly has a good and wonderful place, but not when it turns into the materiality of it all. And it runs.
It's quite obnoxious. It's really one of the most obnoxious things. I've been exposed to some families and some groups that they've become so inward and clannish, this love of their own family. I mean, it is, you talk about rolling a stone on people's hearts, is when you look inward and just worship your family and how great it is. I mean, there's families out there that have like two people or three people. Yeah, no moms, no dads. It's super obnoxious, you know. It's
That it is.
The best thing to do is just to open your heart and bring everybody in. Bring everybody in. That's the antidote. The antidote is to love.
Yes. We
and
we
that's why it. And that's what we do.
Yeah, that's what we all should be doing. We speak about this on Thanksgiving usually because of testimonies about my family and everybody coming to my house and having my fun. While in the meantime, you've put a stone on someone's heart. So yes, this was strongly taught by Mrs. Evans here. Strongly, you never excluded anybody ever. It's cruel, really. So thank you, Tony. Yeah. All right. Well, the lesson goes in quite a bit about waking up from the dream. It is a dream. It took me a long time. I felt like Karen. I wasn't too crazy about this topic, but finally I do love it too. And that idea of waking up from the dream, or even observing the dream with our physical senses. Because it's not the kingdom of heaven on earth that we should be seeing. And again, with Carrie's article, Dispelling from the Dream, The Dream Dispelled by William Brown. The most important thing in life, the true goal of mortal existence, is to awaken from the Adam dream or consciousness to perceive the universe as it really is, spiritually perfect. And then Mrs. Eddy's quote, awakening from the Adam dream, to understand God, she tells us, is the work of eternity and demands absolute consecration of thought, energy, and desire, not science and health. So this isn't a small thing sometimes, because we seem to be immersed in this dream. So awake, yes. Always be telling yourself the truth of every situation to keep yourself awake. Mm-hmm. Craig, did you want to say something?
I was remarked how David, way back then, realized how much he loved God, and that God was responsible for every good thing, and like his ultimate mother. And I just never got that before from any of these, but he's just overflowing with, God, you're wonderful, and you did this and this and this. And I think he takes no credit for
it. That is very true. Mm-hmm. And that is why he was, a man after his own heart or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we can take these models for our own model. And work for it to be more that way. And remember that God did create you in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female. I mean, just think of that. And what does that even mean? And this is what that little Penelope was working with, that she was that image and likeness of God. Therefore, she had to be beautiful. And that God was love, and that God was the only law. And she grasped it so sweetly, as we all should. And then not only that, you're blessed. You're blessed by him, and fruit, be fruitful and multiply, and then have dominion over all things, everything. So there's never really anything to fear, as we are this image and likeness of him, because it's our oneness with him, day by day, our oneness. But then what happens?
Mist.
A mist, thank you. A mist, a fogginess, and then a deep sleep comes. So,
you know, there's some question as to when these two different stories were written.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear to historians that they were definitely not written at the same time. That the Genesis 2 story was written long before the Genesis 1 story was written, and the Genesis 1 story, of course, was the more inspired story, which is why the writers of the Bible, the translators at the time, made it Genesis 1 instead of putting the other story first. Mm-hmm. But starting with Genesis 2, that is the older mythological story.
Thank you. Yeah.
We clearly have two concepts of God. The and Elohim, man. Which is, yes.
And both can correct. Be right.
Yes. And that's what, yeah, the true, yes. And then the lie about the truth. That's why, yeah, the truth has to come first, because the lie has nothing to base itself on except on the truth. So that's why it had to come first.
Yeah, and this is why Mrs. Eddy has a whole chapter on Genesis, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A whole chapter on Genesis and then another whole chapter on Revelation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So much in that book to absorb and should be ever new to each one of us. So Carrie, again, she sent a really interesting article about Cain and Abel, some things I hadn't heard about before. It's by a Richard Verrill. It said, briefly speaking, Cain stands for a mental condition in which the satanic suggestion, ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil, has been accepted. Hence, Cain places himself above the law of God and acknowledges no law but his own will. According to Cruden, the name Cain signifies possession or one who is possessed. In a word, it stands for materialism, including its complete range of social and political evils. Absolute autocracy to abject slavery. Mrs. Eddy concisely describes Cain's mental attitude on page 89 of Science and Health, where she says, Cain very naturally concluded that if life was in the body and man gave it, man had the right to take it away. This incident shows that the belief of life in matter was a murderer from the beginning, end quote. Instead of emulating Abel's good example or learning a lesson from his own mistakes, Cain seeks to quiet remorse with the opiate of envy, bad one, envy, thereby plunging himself into a deeper error. Envy, being a murderous quality, moves Cain to kill Abel. And afterwards, when questioned by God, he denies all personal responsibility, saying, am I my brother's keeper? Cain, under whatever alias he has since been known, never seems to realize that he is and always has been the keeper of his own concept of his brother. He is therefore quite oblivious of the fact that envy has poisoned his thoughts and reversed his natural feelings of affection. That is why this huge danger of envying. You know, that little Penelope, she never really envied she thought, I mean, maybe in some way, but not to a large degree. She thought her sisters were so beautiful. She wished she could be like them. But be careful of this envy. It starts out subtly, and pretty soon you're just foaming at the mouth. It is a murderer. All the emotions of mortal mind, we've been taught that. Mortal mind is a murderer. It kills you. It will kill you. It will kill you. All it kills is this human sense of life. That's what it kills. But if you hang on to it, then you've got this wrong and that wrong and this wrong and that wrong because you've hung on to mortal mind and its beliefs.
What is the 10th commandment?
Gary's
favorite. Thou shalt not covet.
Yes.
I have to say something here. I think, like Penelope, like admiring what somebody has and, you know, wish you could have it doesn't necessarily mean you're coveting it. I don't think so. Because to be coveting it is you be envying it. Oh, I don't have this. And some people will go to the extent of doing something to the person who has whatever they want. I don't think, for example, what Penelope was doing here is that she wasn't coveting it. She loved. She would love to be beautiful too.
Yes, yes.
There's a difference in that.
Yeah, she was happy for her sisters.
Yes.
And that's a big difference. That's a big difference. When you're happy for another's beauty or whatever, when you're truly happy for it, then that's a big difference. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, that's truly loving your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's the antidote to all of that is in the New Testament, which is why Jesus, why we have it. To antidote all of this, because love thy neighbor as thyself wouldn't tolerate. It just is not. That's the answer to that.
Yes, and Florence's suggestion, we'll probably start the Bible study up in the fall, and we're gonna. I hope I haven't talked to Tom, but we're thinking about doing it on this Sermon on the Mount. Is he still on?
On the theater.
Yeah, I sent you an email back on that. So this is fantastic. So we'll use the Sermon on the Mount for the Bible reading this summer. And then we'll kick off the fall season to study the Sermon on the Mount.
Thank you.
When we go back to school.
Recommendation by Florence, as I understand.
Yes, it is. Recommendation by Florence. It'll be a great idea. Really get into it.
For us all to understand, so.
Yeah.
A little at a time to really understand what it is, because Mrs. Eddy wouldn't say what she said about the Sermon on the Mount if it wasn't that important.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
She called it the Diamond Sermon.
Yeah. Diamond Sermon. Yes. Yeah, it's very exciting. Thank you, Tom. So, yeah, we can start studying it this summer when we have some time, perhaps, and then I don't know if Tom has any specific questions to give us, but if he does, we can post.
Well, it would just be the reading, kind of similar to what we did when we did the Psalms of Ascent,
right? Okay.
And so we studied the Psalms of Ascent, a few of them, you know, every so often during the summer, right? So we'll study portions of the, or read, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, organize it, but during the summer, and then we'll have our discussion in the fall. And we might have more than one Bible study on the Sermon on the Mount. It might be worth it, you know?
Oh, I would think so. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
So much. You can't do that in one.
We can't do it in one. No way.
Yeah.
So I also asked in the email, and it'd be interesting to find out, but Gilbert Carpenter published a book called Early Verse. So I haven't been able to find the book, but it looks like it might have some interesting poems and other writings by Mary Baker Eddy.
I'll look and see if they have.
Does that ring a bell?
Yes, it does. I think we have it.
We'll look in our collection and I'll let you know.
The things from Keystone, I think we might have it.
Linda will look for it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Great. Awesome. And also, you know, Gilbert Carpenter and Senior and Junior, they publish a book of poems, so we might use some of the poems from their book.
Yes, we have that.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. Well, this article goes on about Abel. Abel, on the contrary, is a primitive type of the Christ. Primitive type of the Christ. His acceptable offering prefigures the living sacrifice, which is the overcoming of self and involves a recognition of the unreality of matter. The name Abel is defined by Mrs. Eddy in the glossary as watchfulness, self-offering, surrendering to the Creator, the early fruits of experience. Because of his naive and ingenuous nature, Abel does not understand the necessity for handling the destructive claims of malicious animal magnetism, and so temporarily falls a victim of its seeming power. Wholly unsuspicious of Cain's deep-seated resentment, Abel goes daily about his own affairs, apparently without the slightest idea that his example of righteousness is perpetually inflaming his brother's smoldering hatred. Was it not inevitable that in these circumstances the one result would follow and the moment arrive when the accumulated malice in Cain's heart would break forth and give vent to a murderous impulse? When the tragic moment did at last arrive, it may have seemed at the time that brute force had actually triumphed over goodness. This, however, was not the case. As a further study of the narrative shows, in the 25th and following verse, we read that Eve bore a third son and called his name Seth, meaning renewal. "For God," said she, "hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew." And the passage concludes, "Then began man to call the name of the Lord." I don't think I knew this. The seed of Cain, according to the writer of Genesis, rapidly degenerated until the time of the flood, when it had become so corrupt that it was temporarily extinguished. That's what happened to Cain's part of the deal. The offspring of Seth, however, was spiritually progressive, and by reference to the genealogy set out in the third chapter of Luke's Gospel, we found that it included such illustrious names as Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, David, and Jesus. Regarding the seed of Seth from a metaphysical point of view, and not merely from the human standpoint, we are enabled to follow in some measure the spiritual evolution, which is traceable throughout the entire scriptures, as, for example, Enoch's ascension, Noah's preservation in the ark, the divine guidance of the Hebrew patriarchs, the journey from Egypt to the promised land, the establishment of the Mosaic law, the revelation of John and its promise of the eternal triumph of good over evil, and the permanent establishment of God's kingdom on earth. All these are human footsteps marking the unfolding of the compound spiritual idea known in Christian Science as the Christ, the Son of the living God, of whom Abel is the earliest type in the Bible. So I thought that was some interesting piece of history there. It explains a lot. And you see, Era, it's an example of Era only being able to destroy itself, right? Era destroyed itself in the flood. While the good thought, the good seed, prospered and continued.
And continues today.
It does. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I found so interesting too in the lesson where it says, "And Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod." So, what is the land of Nod?
Sleep.
Yes. Yeah. Sleeping. Right. Like, isn't there? There's those children's nursery rhymes about the land of Nod. So, yeah,
I also read that it symbolizes a place of estrangement or banishment from the presence of God.
Mm-hmm. What does?
The word Nod does. Yeah. Oh.
Great, interesting, yes. And so then in the lesson after that, it's awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. You see, don't go there. Don't go in that path that Cain took. It's so unfortunate.
Shake thyself from the dust.
Yes.
Stop nodding, right?
Mm-hmm. Stop nodding.
Or nodding off.
Yeah, nodding off. The land of Nod. It's a clear sign there what was going on. So, and, you know, it goes on to say that, again, that whoso shall do the will of my Father which is in heaven, the same is my brother and sister and mother. And the curse causeless shall not come. You know, a lot of things, I didn't even know this, but in other cultures, things are cursed, and that's not of God. Not of God. No cursing.
No superstition.
Yes, thank you, because that's what superstition is. Uh-uh. It has no power, nothing. Nothing. That's the land of Nod.
One sec. Also, I keep thinking, if anybody that's working for God is a doer, as it says, but in a Nod, you're just observers, it seems.
Or a dreamer.
Yeah, a dreamer. Watching, and but there's no active responsibility for anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is what is so sad about these people who turn to drugs and, what, opium. And,
oh, yes.
And you know, they are literally just dreaming away the hours. That does not have to be. God never said it. And again, we go throughout our day saying, awake, awake, keep ourselves awake and others away from that.
That's what I love. The Whitfield movie that just came out, Awake, he says. The way it really says it.
Yeah, yes, yes. You saw that. I don't know if I mentioned that. The Great Awakening was about Ben Franklin and this English preacher who came to America. George Whitfield.
Yeah, it's based on facts.
Yeah, based on facts and how he went up and down through the colonies. This was before the Revolutionary War, awaking everyone to get them to come to God. And that sort of prepared everything in order to have the Revolutionary War and also to defeat the
tyranny.
The tyranny, that's the word. Thank you. Yes. Awake, awake. It's a beautifully done movie. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, and then we have, and this is so important, there's neither Jew nor Greek, bond nor free, male nor female, for we are all one in Christ. Yeah. Right, that's it.
Period.
Period.
end of story.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's it.
No superiority or inferiority.
No. Thank you. No, we're not having that. Uh-uh. Nope. And that is another, it was a beautiful article about that, if I can find it now, on the right identity. And it was by Annie Knott. Let me see. Oh, goodness. Anyway, it talks about the only way, and this is Evans was so clear about this, too, you do not judge anybody except on how much Christ they represent. That's the only thing that matters, truly.
And you help bring them back up if they're down low.
Yes.
And the judging. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Pardon me?
No, go ahead when you finish.
No, that was it for now. Oh, here it is.
I was just going to say, on the judging, it's really bearing false witness of the person, isn't it?
It is.
Yes. Right.
And it goes back again to the Sermon on the Mount. Mm-hmm. So, yes, this article says, in the United States, we at this time think with ever-growing reverence upon the character of Abraham Lincoln. And as we pause to wonder at his heroic nature, we recall Mrs. Eddy's words on miscellaneous writings, great only is good because fashioned divinely were these unpretentious yet colossal characters, Paul and Jesus. Mm-hmm. And then it says, what is man that thou art mindful of him? What indeed is autocrat or artisan, prince or plowman, save as he individually expresses man's identity, is known to the creative mind with ever-folding possibilities for greatness and goodness, because he expresses the one perfect mind. That is all that's important, not your degrees, anything else, how much of the Christ. And will you read your poem, which goes along with this?
I looked up by my brother's keeper. I thought this was so important. And then I found the post, and it said, when you really understand this, you are the keeper. A keeper means to see everybody correctly. And then right there in the same, on our website, perfect in love sight. This is by Gilbert Carpenter in the 500 Watching Points. I see myself as God's own child, as perfect in his sight. I see my brother, man, as well, perfect child of light. Then, to complete my prayer, I see him seeing me aright. I see him seeing me, seeing him as perfect. Love sight.
A beautiful prayer, Gilbert Carpenter. I've never heard it described as my brother's keeper. I like that. That's a good way to describe that. All right, Gary's going to end on a short note here.
All right, this is from an article called The Call of Duty by MSB. As working Christian scientists, we should not be found sleeping at the post of duty, but awake and doing. And as soldiers in a common cause, we should be loyal and obedient to our leader. We should never allow ourselves to fall into a state of apathy, indifference, or discouragement, since each of us has work to do that no other can do for us. We need to heed well the text on our sentinel as it comes to us every week. What I say unto you, I say unto all. What?
Okay, thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Very much.